Hey, welcome back, everybody, to my podcast. In today's episode, we have a special guest, Coach Pablo Laso. And in today's episode, we talked a lot about his preparation process for the Final Four or big tournaments in general, like the Kings Cup. Also, the thought process during the Final Four, during the important games, how to prepare them afterwards for the continuing of the season, the regular season games, the playoffs. The approach to communication with players, behind the scenes stories, a lot of stories from his playing times as well as from Real Madrid times. Lots of things to take away here for all the coaches and that are interested in communication like me. So please subscribe to this podcast. Please share if you enjoyed this episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing you soon again. Thanks. Bye. Coach, we're recording. How are you? Perfect.
Everything okay. Thank you.
Welcome to my podcast world.
Pleasure to be with you.
My background is always different because I keep switching places. So it's always hard to predict where I'm at.
I know. I remember I spoke to a common friend, Hugo Lopez, who is coaching in China now.
Yeah.
And he told me to say hi to you. And he said,
"Thank you.
Where is he now?" I'm like, I guess in Lithuania. And he goes like, he moves everywhere. I'm like, yeah.
It's hard to predict. Some people can recognize maybe by my background, but once they recognize it, I'm probably in a different place already. Today is a difficult day for all the Celtics Nation because Celtics got eliminated. We will talk about other things, but I was wondering, because it's a difficult day for me personally also, I'm very emotionally involved in everything also with national team when I was involved. It's always difficult to get past it, you know, whether it's a long season or a long summer, the investment emotionally is very tough. So I'm wondering, first of all, how do you approach a devastating end to the season when you finish, let's say in the playoffs, in the final, you finish with a loss and there's a big drainage, you know, emotionally with the players. What's your first thought? What's the agenda that you take at the end of the season?
Okay, my first agenda is that night I sleep well, very good. Like probably the night during the season that I sleep better, either if I win, either if I lose. Probably on my mind, the first relief is it's finished.
Yeah.
What it's good, but it's not the same. I mean, it's not the same if you're winning or losing. But it's true that I always rest very well that night because I always probably mentally inside of me, I have the, you know, the situation where, okay, it's finished. It's over. You don't got to go. You don't have to practice tomorrow. You don't have to prepare another game. So it's I understand it's hard, but at the same time, it's kind of a relief personal because, okay, it's finished. Then it comes the moment when it's okay. Like yesterday for the Celtics Nation, it was a bad day. But for sure, it will take a couple of days to understand what they really did during the year, no? And to get all that process together and start thinking about the future and what it was good and what it was bad. Not only yesterday's night result, everything is bad, and not everything was good for sure. So they have to think ahead and try to think the best about the future. That was my feeling because during the year, it's true, and more in Europe than in the States, that you have, let's say, stages, okay? Like, for example, you have Super Cup at the beginning. Super Cup ain't important. Well, I mean, you better win it.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you got to qualify for the King's Cup, what it's important. Okay, then the King's Cup come. Okay, King's Cup. Well, I mean, it's important. Then you got to get in the playoffs for the EuroLeague. And then you got to play the playoffs. Probably is the moment of the year with more stress. And then the Final Four, and then the playoffs are your domestically. So at the end, it's more stages, but the last day is always like, for me, it was always like a relief. Like, okay, it's done. My job is done. Now I have to think what we did good and what we did bad. And always takes that little process of, because at the end, like I said, it's not easy to say, okay, it was a great year because everything went good. Okay, we have to, let's say, take a look at the whole year, not only the last game or the last situation. But I understand that today, for Boston Celtics fans,
it's dark ages. Yeah.
True,
but
true.
The what you said about at the end of a season, that you reflect a little bit. So this is a good start for me for the whole, because I prepared several topics and we're going to get into those. But before we get into those, there's one thing that I wanted to ask you also. The top question you ask yourself after the season is finished, you ask yourself personally, you know, then during the season, you know, and if you need to improve something, what do you reflect? And I realize it's different with every season. It can be different questions you ask yourself. And at the end of a season, towards the end of a season, when you approach the final games, what questions do you ask yourself? Do you find yourself asking yourself most?
Well, first thing that you look at is you try to take a big picture of it, big picture of players. How did players react on situations? How did you react? What things that you did were good for the team, what things that you did maybe were not that good for the team, or in which ones you should have maybe got into it more, and in others that maybe you didn't get into and you should have gotten into. So a little bit is a reflection or a mind process where you see the whole picture and you try to make decisions that are going to be good for the team on the future. During the years, that's not that easy. Why? Because, you lose, but then you get in a plane, you're going somewhere else, and you're going to play in less than 48 hours. So it's very difficult to, you know, stop, because at that time you get together with your assistants, prepare the game, make sure that you recover, you have to prepare practice. So a lot of times things go so quick that it's very difficult to slow down and take a look at the whole picture. And I think one of the, or probably my biggest decisions comes on those times right after the season, because then is when you look at it and you say, okay, if you want to fight for this, we got to do better this. It's a moment where you really take a look and decide what you want to do on the future to improve your team. Because during the year, like I said, it's difficult because, you're involved on trips, games, practices, injuries, and it's very difficult. But at the end of the year, it's the moment. For example, I think Real Madrid, since I was the coach 11 years or 12 years ago, we were probably the first team who went with a long team, long squad. Why? Because back on my play days, a long time ago, we used to play between 35, 40, 45 games maximum during the year. Now you're playing 80-some.
Yeah.
Zalgiris, how many games is Zalgiris going to play this year? So,
yes.
So all the top teams in Europe are going to play between 70, 80, some even 90 games. So you need somehow to increase the number of players that you're going to use during the year. And it's not, okay, I go with this team. If somebody gets hurt, I sign another one. Market doesn't give you that. And it's difficult. For example, when we talk about your Lithuanian, let's put an example on Salgiris. For me, Shannon Evans was a great signing. I liked him a lot in Maccabi. Okay, he didn't stay in Tel Aviv. He went to Salgiris. And I think there is one season for Maccabi before Shannon Evans got hurt and after Shannon Evans. Why? Did they not replace him? Yes, they replaced him. But it's not the same. I mean, it's difficult. So at the end, for example, the good thing that we tried, and this is something that we thought back on the time, is, okay, let's get a long squad, let's get a long team, and we have to manage this different, because now basketball has changed. And it's important that you see that. That's one picture that you take at the end of the year, and you probably think about improving on the following years.
So this is a good, this balancing a long roster is important. So my first topic that I wanted to talk to you, because I prepare four quarters for every coach, and my first quarter is going to be preparation for Final Four or King's Cup, for example. Okay, so because those are it's an approach that you just don't start preparing a couple of days before. You start the preparation process, the mental preparation process for the rotations for the whole team. It starts much earlier than that. And especially with a big roster, it's the difference between a one of the favorites to go into the Final Four versus one of the underdogs to go into the Final Four. So because you coach Real Madrid for 11 years, you were most of the time when you came in, you were one of the favorites, let's say, because the expectation is always there. What was the approach you took, especially with the long roster, Let's talk about Final Four first. Four, how early did you start the mental preparation in terms of rotations and the mental approach of the players to get the provoker reaction out of the players towards the Final Four?
Okay, for me, it starts on the first day of practice. Somehow you have to get into the player's mind that what we're here for. We're in Real Madrid. Okay, what do they expect for us? They expect for us to, I don't know, save the division, let's say, stay on the ACB. No, they expect us to win the ACB or be on the final. Play at high level, win games. What are your expectations? So you work that from the first day. I think that's important that players that go to a team, they know where they go. Let's say, Milano signs a player. And he thinks, okay, I'm going to Milano. Great. I'm getting a good contract. Yeah. Okay. Everything would be good if you think like that. But at the end, you better think that you better win with Milan, because you're the top team in Italy. So I think that starts from the first day. And I think it's something that you have to work on the players more than just, okay, they know. No, they know, but you have to somehow show them what they have to do what you need them to do for the team from the beginning. Then it comes a little bit more what you just said about preparation, moments of the time. Okay, let's say Super Cup. Super Cup is difficult. Why? Probably you have three practices with the whole team when you play the Super Cup. And it's a title. And I always said, the easy thing is saying, okay, it's very difficult. You know, we just have to practice. We just got together. Okay, somehow you have to prepare and make sure that you, turn something inside the players to make sure that, okay, we're playing for the title. So we have to be ready. We might not be ready 100%, let's say, on plays, or physically, but we have to be ready to compete, to be competitive from the beginning. Then we're going to have a time, but at the same time, we have to compete, because I'm the kind of coach that don't think that this is an on and off situation. Okay, now we're not playing for anything. We have to be ready for the King's Cup. King's Cup is in February. So what do? Give him vacation until January? No, that's impossible. So somehow you have to work on the mechanisms that can be important to be ready at that moment. It's true that you can manage, let's say, minutes of times, injuries. Like, for example, I remember, I think it was two years ago with the pandemic, because pandemic was a little bit weird for everyone. We got the COVID in Madrid, like in December, end of December, January. It was me. I think it was Thomas Hurtel first, then Poirier, then everybody got him. And then they postponed the game. So we went to the Cup and we were playing like on the two previous week, we played like six games before the Cup. That was not good. Okay, what that means? We cannot compete because we have to somehow adjust. And it's important that us as coaches, we understand that. Probably the most difficult one for me is Final Four, because for me, the most difficult part of the year is the playoff. Because on the playoff, on the EuroLeague playoff, you're going to face a team that it's one of the best teams in Europe. And I don't think that in a five-game series, you have that much advantage. I think you have advantage, home advantage, if you play three games. But in five, not that much. Seven, not that much. So I think it's very important to make sure your team is ready to play the playoffs, because then Final Four is more or less in 1 week. And then after the Final Four, it comes playoff time. And I remember back on the days, one player who played with me in Vitoria used to say that season is finished. Yeah, but we got the playoffs. And he was like, no, really. Season is finished. Now we just play. So it's a good thing. So if we win, we'll get the champion. We'll be champions. If we lose, we go on vacation. That was Chicho Sibilio, who died some years ago. Great teammate and great person and great player. And it was funny the way he treated that situation, no? For him. And I learned a lot about that sentence as a coach now, okay? So you have to somehow show your players what you're playing for. They have to be ready. For sure, you will do the things to get them ready, but this has, it has to be something mental that they know what's coming. Okay? We won the EuroLeague Champions one time on a Sunday, and I think we were playing Tuesday ACB game, less than 48 hours. How do you manage that? It's very difficult, but you have to accept it. You know it from the beginning. So I'm not a big fan of excuses about, okay, calendar, blah, blah. I'm more fan of making sure the team is ready to play every night. And then if you're ready to play every night, then you will be ready at the important moments of the season, mentally, physically, although let's say you have injuries that guys that cannot play. Okay, you adjust. You have to adjust. But I think it's important that you make clear to the players that the important times of the season will come and you have to be ready working from the first day.
So this is important because how do you recognize that one player is ready, one player is not ready? Because there's some cues that some players will show you during the leading up to the Final Four, let's say the couple of weeks before, because you're already thinking about, you know, the matchups already, who you're going to play against, and you're trying to prepare yourself in the in that moment with the player. And you want to know who's going to be ready to help you, who's not going to be ready to help you. Who can you trust, basically? So how do you recognize the cues and which cues do you look for in the players?
Well, first of all, I will put an NBA example, and it's good. Have you seen that in some playoffs, players don't even play? And all of a sudden, next playoff, they play a lot. I think that's great by the coaches. Great or how reading what it's important for the team at that moment and have everybody ready. I think that's very important. Understanding that you can control most of the situations, but not all of them. Okay? Let's say if you have a veteran team. Okay, a veteran team can be very good on the Final Four. But you have to get on the Final Four. Yeah. And maybe if you push the veterans during the whole year, maybe at the Final Four, they'll run out of gas. So I think it's very important when you make the team and make the idea of the team to be able to have those little, let's say, adjustments that maybe on the NBA, the example that I put on the NBA, it is very clear. Okay, in one series, we see one guy don't play or play not much. And then all of a sudden, next series, he plays a lot. Okay, what is that? All of a sudden, it comes like this. No, probably the coach thought about it. Okay, we're going to match up better, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's part of the coach, and it's important. But at the same time, and this was great when I went to San Antonio one year, I remember I went for the preseason, and I remember they signed Robert Orbit. So we went to the first practices, and it was funny, and it was very good friend of mine, Tomo Mauric, coach from Slovenia. And we were like, Robert Orr is totally out of shape. I mean, he was like, I mean, he's making the practice look bad. I mean, and I remember RC Buford coming up. How, guys, how do you see the team? Blah, 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 blah. And we were like, very good. Team practice is well. Shame that Tony Parker got hurt because, you know, but Ginobili is very good, blah, 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 blah. And Tomo, when with all his good spirit at that moment, he was, I don't understand much about, you know, bringing Orri, because bringing Robert Orri, like it's a young team with a lot of talent, and RC Buford looked at him like he's the best sign that we ever had. So Tomo looked at me like he's totally out of shape, and RC went like, listen, it's, I think it was September, October, we signed Robert Orri to play in June. And they won the championship, and Robert Orri was key. So I think that's important when you talk about these situations, that you need to have the whole picture. And probably to make Robert Orri as important as it was at that moment in June, okay, Duncan has to carry him, Parker has to carry him, Ginobili has to carry him, the whole team has to carry. But in that moment, they all know that Robert Orri is going to show. And I think that's part of probably chemistry of the team, and also knowledge of what you need at any moment.
It's a long term approach. You think about it long term, especially with a veteran team, with the favorites. When you have a long rotation, you're trying to prepare. You manage the team throughout the season. That's why the rotations are so important, where you have to also give them some leash, give them some opportunities to play. But then also sometimes you sit the player down and the player doesn't understand why, and he's out for two. So what's the conversation like with the player that doesn't understand when he's out of the rotation to make him understand the long-term picture?
Yeah, well, that's difficult. I mean, I want to put an example in another sport, and probably you all saw this. You remember on the last games, like a month ago or something, Guardiola was sitting Haaland with 20 minutes to go on every game, and everybody was like, why Guardiola is going to sit in Haaland? He got 3 goals. He could go 4 goals and beat a record, blah, blah. And Guardiola, he's driving the car, and he knows he needs Haaland. So, because I didn't see Haaland getting out of the rotation, he was playing every night. But, you know, with the game decided, boom, Haaland out. So I think that was great managing by Guardiola, probably. And I'm talking about another sport. But in basketball also happens. A lot of times you have to take a look at long-term situations. Also, on the other way, for example, if you have a young guy that needs the minutes to improve, to get better, maybe you use him in moments of the years where you give him extra minutes because you know it's going to be important. I remember I talked to, I think it was Zvezdan Mitrovic once when he was coaching Asvel, and we were talking before the season. We played a scrimmage before the season, and he told me, now I have to give time to these young guys. And he was like very, he had it very clear on his head. Now is the moment where I have to give these guys minutes, so make sure they'll be ready for the next, let's say, next level. He wasn't worried about his veterans playing good at the right time. But to, let's say, to make that roster long, he need those guys, those young guys, to get the minutes. That way, when he needs them, they're going to be ready.
So, but I'm sure, without mentioning names, I'm sure you had players in your career that were not happy with sitting down and not playing and you giving time to somebody else. And you had an idea behind it. How did you even talk beforehand, or did you want to see the reaction of him and then talk afterwards? Because there has to be some sort of communication.
Yeah, usually I prefer to talk afterwards.
After.
Why? Yes. I'm going to explain you why. Every player has a different approach of it. I had a player, and this is funny story. We're not going to mention names.
No names.
But I told him, listen, I'm going to rest you on the weekend, so you're not traveling to play wherever. And he went like, no, give me another day of rest. I prefer to go with the team away from home. I'm like, why? Because my kids don't sleep at night. So if we go out at night, I can sleep. I mean, good. I understood. So the message was clear. I understand that I need, you know, maybe a day of rest, that I cannot play all the games, let's say. But why take me out of this game? And I went like, well, I think it was good because you could stay home 2 days that we're going to be traveling. And he went like, no. Give me rest another day. I prefer this. So I have to manage that. And a lot of times, if you tell them straight before, it's going to work out different on every player because every player has their own mind. I remember once, for example, in Spain, you have to play with 4 Spanish. Let's say I want to rest, I don't know, Rudy Fernandez one night. Yeah, but how about if I don't have 4 Spanish? He has to play. He has to be in the roster. Okay, you have to manage those things. And I think it's always better that before you tell them, they see why are you doing this. Then you can go and tell them, hey, listen, I didn't want to play you much because, okay, we have a big game on the weekend, or we have the King's Cup and I didn't want to get injured. And it all comes a little bit with, you know, their IQ that we talked a lot about on the floor, but also their IQ outside the floor. And that's very important. Like, for example, I coach Luca. Do you think Luka wants to stop? When he was in Madrid, he wanted to play every night. And if one day you tell him, Luka, rest, because we have a... He will look at you like, Pablo, you're stupid or what? Because Luka was young and he was feeling great at that moment. And also at that time, I think it was good for Luka to play a lot of minutes, you know, to get used to learn. But it's different than if you have, Felipe Reyes, who could be almost his father. So you have to make sure that Felipe, you use him different way. But I don't like, and we talked about this, I don't like to go straight and tell him, hey, today, no, this, how about if you need to play? How about if I go, I say, Felipe, for example, we talk about Felipe because he's already retired. Felipe, today you're coming with the team, but you're not going to play. How about if all of a sudden you need him? No, I think it's always better to show them what's going on and then talk to them and explain them. Why not? I don't have a problem with that.
As you never know what's going to happen right before the game. I mean, leading up to the, you can't. This is the same thing like changing the starting lineup right before the game. You know, like they're already thinking one way, and then you changing it messes the whole team up. So there's certainly something to it, to wait till after the game. But I was wondering also, I always tell the coaches, may the titles rest in peace. So today they all rest in peace, because I want to also talk about the failures a little bit. And to me, it's important to think about that during the Final Four, for example, or any big game, let's say King's Cup final or whatever, we've all have lost in those finals as well, or a semifinal even. Leading up, let's use the Final Four as an example, because there is still ACB games to play in while you were in Madrid, for example, that you already know that the game is lost. Okay, like leading up to a minute, the game is decided, and you, what thoughts are running through your head? Because you have to think about the next week. There is a game on Tuesday or Wednesday that you have to still play and get the team ready for, and you have to certainly have some sort of message to send. What kind of message are you trying to send? How do you try to send it? Because I have, when we were I was in with CSKA in 2012, we lost the devastating final against Olympiakos in Istanbul, and we were destroyed. You know, we were destroyed, and the president came in and he gave for that situation, it was a very good speech, because it got the guys ready that we still have to win the VTB. And we went and we swept Khimki 3-0, because that was just the way. The hole is already deep enough. You can't dig yourself deeper in a hole. So what thoughts are running through your head of how to get your team ready for the next? Are you thinking about the speech? Are you thinking about what rotation you're going to take? What's the approach?
Well, I think you can, okay, the example that you put with Cesca is pretty clear. I remember that situation for you guys. And I think it was good and the reaction was great. But a lot of times, you as a coach you and your staff is the one who has to manage them. Because a lot of times you get in the locker room after a loss or after a win, and you see situations that you like or you don't like. For example, last year in Madrid, we lost the cup on the final against Barcelona. And the team was destroyed. Like I never saw on my 11 years in Madrid. Why? Probably because I think it was the year of the COVID, where we had a lot of injuries, blah, blah, people out playing a lot of games. So we fought like crazy, but we lost. Okay. So I got in the locker room and I could not, let's say, get him up or kill them and say, we lost because we didn't do this, blah, blah. No. I saw the team, I mean, mentally destroyed. They did a great effort, and I thanked them because I said, guys, you've been great. We lost. This is part of basketball. And then it came the moment where how much time was going to happen or we needed to recover from that. Probably was the time where we have more defeats on my period in Real Madrid. Why? There was no way to recover out of that loss. And I don't know if I will decide the same way, but I tried to get that loss out of the head practicing. Because at that moment, I could not give him 2 weeks off. We lost the final of the cup on Sunday. And I think we were playing Žalgiris in Kaunas on Thursday, and we got killed. But we were not ready mentally. So the example is, what would I do in that moment? I would go 2 weeks off. But I can't, because I have games. So my decision at that moment, it was, okay, maybe the hard way. Let's practice. Let's go hard, blah, blah. Okay. So it took us almost until the playoffs to get ready. And then we beat Maccabi in the playoffs and we played the Final Four. But it took us 1 month almost 2 months to rebuild everything because it was very hard. Other times, not that much. For example, we lost one in Milano, and it was hard because I remember Jule and Mirotic, they were very young, and they were like, oh, we lost two in a row. We lost against Olympiacos, and this year we lost against Maccabi. But they all jump out quick. Like, for example, a guy like Jule wants to play right away. In fact, he played 48 hours later, and he played great. He had a bad game, finished. That, it was the final, but for sure, bad. We're sorry. But, you know, he jumped over it quick. So I think that feeling, you have it when you know your team, okay? When you win, usually it's easier. Because, you know, you don't have to recover anyone. Everybody thinks that everything was good. So you're on that, you know.
You're riding the wave.
You're riding the wave. So it's easy. I think it was the year we won everything that we beat Olympiacos on the final in Madrid, and we won the league. Sincerely, we didn't do nothing. We just, like you said, we were in the way. We were like getting on the bus, go to play, win, home. 20 days, let's play. Even Carroll came up to me, JC Carroll, and said, Pablo, do we have to do something after the playoffs? No, you can go home. Okay, so I'm gonna get my ticket for the third game. Why? Because we're going to win 3-0. So you're on that wave.
Yeah.
And you don't see it that easy, but it's normal that players do. The other day I was talking with a friend, he's coaching, and he told me that on the last two games of the season, they played not very good, and he was very afraid about the playoffs. So he had a conversation with the players one by one, and they were all, don't worry about it. We're going to beat these guys in the playoffs. And he was like, well, we'll see. We're not under. No, don't worry. I think it's good that we lost. That way we get this team on the playoffs that we're going to win. So a lot of times it's like very important for the coach to catch up what players are feeling at that moment. Okay?
Yes.
We'd like to tell you that this friend is 0-2 now on the playoffs, winning.
I think what you're saying is also there's a lot of intuition. There's a lot of you have to read the room. You have to get a feeling for what the aura is like in that room and what the players need. It's a mix of experience and intuition.
Intuition because and all of a sudden you get that intuition because not even personal. You have it in the locker room. You speak to the physios.
Yes.
Years ago. And the physios, they spend a lot of time with them because it's on end of the season. Everybody has literally injuries, blah, blah. And you go like, oh, I'm very worried about, I don't know, this playoff series against Barcelona. And the physio all of a sudden goes like, don't worry, we're going to beat him. And you go like, I mean, no. And he goes like, everybody's ready. Don't worry, everybody's okay. So that intuition that, let's say, or you have your own intuition. I prefer, I don't know, to play against this team than the other one because we match up better. That intuition, that work that you already have done during the year, it comes out at that times, and usually moments for coaches, it's that kind of moments where you are like, okay, now I have to take these decisions that maybe players are not going to like it, but they're going to be good in the future. And a lot of times is the, you know, the hard part of coaching. A lot of times, do things that probably only you understand, and everybody's not going to understand.
Yes, yes. Let's talk a little bit about when you were playing for Real Madrid, because you were also playing there. And I was wondering that was there something that changed over the course of your career from player to coach that you believed in very strongly as a player, but you changed your approach and your thought on it as a coach that you completely flipped from one belief to another. Was there something about the game that you changed your opinion on?
Well, the game has changed it a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember like now, back on my days when I used to shoot, let's say 5, 6, 7 three-pointers, I was like, I shot 7 three-pointers. That's a lot. That's too much. That was back on 1995 when I signed in Madrid. So the game has changed, and physically unbelievable, much more physically than tactically or technically. People just talk about technical and tactical, but also physically has changed a lot. And that those changes physically has obliged coaches to do different things to adjust to that. Like For example, when I played in Madrid, Felco was a coach. Obradovic was a coach. Obradovic does a lot of different things now, coaching, that he used to do 20 years ago. So I think that for me, I always said that I didn't give my best as a player in Madrid because probably I stuck on, okay, I made it to Real Madrid. Instead of, there is when you start, okay, I'm in Real Madrid, now I have to probably go over and play better and do more for the team. So I always criticize myself back of those days because I think I could do more. And so I carry that one to my coaching days, trying to understand players that it's not making the team. Let's say Usman Garuba or players from the youth program or a new guy that we signed. It's not what that you made it. It's, okay, now it's where you have to give your best because you're playing on a high-level team and you're playing to win everything. So that click is important that you go over it, and it's something that I criticize myself back on those times.
So you said you played, and that was one of my questions too, that you played for Željko. And I was wondering, playing for Željko versus coaching versus Željko, what's something you can maybe that helped you to coach against him, that you know how he thinks, you know what he's looking for? Because a lot of times as a coach, you're trying to think what the other coach is thinking. You're trying to think of how they will prepare for you. And then there's a balance between that and also how you prepare for them, you know, because you have to think about your team as well. So I was wondering, after playing for Željko and then coaching against him, how much did you think about what he was thinking versus thinking about your own backyard?
Yeah. Well, for me, let's say the biggest percentage, it's my team. That's my biggest percentage. I think, let's say, scouting the other team, scouting the other coach, thinking about what the other coach is going to do. I think it's important. But for me, the most important thing is make sure my team is able to compete at the highest level that the team can. What do I mean with this? If I lose too much time on thinking what Felco is going to do, what Barthokas is going to do, I think I'm getting the focus out of my team. I think it's very important to stay on your team and know what you can do and believe in what you can do, maybe to hurt the other team, maybe to hurt, I don't know, Barthokas or Felco at this time. I know Felco, for sure, like you said, using the example of Felco, I learned a lot of things from him during the years that he coached me and the way he prepared games. I always have a very good example of how he treated players, and it was on me. So I'm going to count it because it was on me with him coaching. We played the final against Verona. Remember, it was European Cup, I think, and we played Verona with Jusolino at the point. So the 2 weeks before, he started practicing. He used to go, you, Pablo, you rest. And then all of a sudden, Pablo get in and play. So it was like this. And usually, it was Antunes and me. And he started using somebody else at the point, Odiroga or Santos. But I was always on the bench at the beginning of practice. So I was like, okay, probably I think too much as a player. But I was like, why is he doing this to me? And he was not Felco probably worrying about me, like behavior or anything. No. He was just blah, 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 blah. So the final comes. First half, we were so-so. I didn't play a minute. So I was like, we're in a final. I think I can get into this game, blah, 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 blah. So we go a halftime, and I go to the bathroom. And Felco sneaks behind me. And he go, Pablito, what happens? I'm like, no, nothing. Let's go. We got to play better in the second half, blah, blah, and get the victory. Yeah. Are you ready to play? I'm like, yeah, for sure. It's final. I'm ready to play. But are you ready to play? Seriously. I'm like, yes. Okay, then go out there. So the second half starts. And 5-6 minutes after the halftime, he starts looking at me. And all of a sudden, he goes, Pablito. Antunes or Santos, whoever. So he comes up to me when I'm sitting on that little bench they put you back on the desk, and he comes like, Pablito, please, let's win the game now. So I played very good. And I played like, I don't know, 10 minutes more or less. And the last 3 minutes, we were winning like by 15. So all of a sudden, I see substitution. So he took me out. And I was playing, you know, very good, but we already have the more or less the victory. So it was a good moment, let's say, for a point guard, you know, to control the game, blah, blah. So he sat me down. Well, okay. So when I came to the bench, he went like, Pablito, very good. We won the game. Sit down and rest. You did enough. So I was like, well, after the game, he spoke to me 1 minute. He said, Pablito, listen, simple, huh? You cannot stop Yusolino. So I killed Yusolino with Antunes, Santos. They did a great job. So when you got in, Yusolino had no legs. So you could do your thing.
Slowly prepared.
Yeah. So I always have that that situation in my head. The way he managed to win the game. Okay. If I put Pablo at the beginning, he's not defend as well as Antunes can do it or Ismael Santos. But Pablo can be good when Yusolino gets tired, blah, blah. So he prepared the game very well. So we're talking about a great coach with a great mind and with a clear plan. At that moment, as a player, probably I thought, this guy's crazy. He's killing me. He's stupid, whatever. But now, 20 years after, I'm like, that's a great move.
He was very smart.
And he was very smart. Okay, now that I, you know, now we play each other and I watch the way he managed games, he managed his players. I always think he always have those preparation things on his head and makes the players understand what he wants at that moment. And it was funny because when he told me that after the game, it was very simple for me to realize, damn, he's right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the egoism you say in English, egoism.
Yeah, ego.
The egoism of me as a player at that moment was like, I should play more, blah, blah. But for him, his only ego was, let's win.
Yeah.
I don't care if I use Pablo 7 or 10. So that's something that for me, it's good about Thelko. It's great. And I always think that he's going to use it when you play against him.
It's also he put you in the best position to succeed also, not only for the team, but also for the player to look as good as possible. So he's trying every coach should try to maximize the team, but also maximize the player in whatever role, whatever they do best. And that's probably the hardest part to balance the two.
Yeah, that's a great point because at the end, well, that's como se dice, anécdota this when I talk to this story. This little story makes all these things to talk about. It's like, okay, he put me on the right position to play good.
Yes.
To help the team and to win the game. So it's not only about, okay, I'm coaching Real Madrid and you did it good or bad because you put a zone, you did it good or bad because you took out a bound, you did it good or bad because you put this player. And a lot of times coaches will get criticized for that. What I understand, because people watch the game from outside, and I don't know, if I watch a game tonight, I would probably criticize any coach saying I wouldn't do that. But only the coach is the one who is, like we talked about Guardiola, he is under control. And I think Thelko is a monster doing that, on controlling situations and controlling his team and getting the best out of his team.
Yes, mastermind to plan every step ahead and to think how the it's like Tetris, you know, you're putting the pieces the way they're supposed to fit at the end, and then hopefully you can go for that.
Exactly. The only problem coaches will have is we will have somebody watching the game saying that we're wrong. So we have to accept it.
Yes.
We have to accept it.
They will always be there. They will not go anywhere. Yeah. So when you started to when you came to Real Madrid, you started to coach. What do you remember? Do you remember the first big lesson you learned in the first year you came, and something you took away? Because that was the first big job, let's say that you took, and it was the beginning of your 11 years of Real Madrid career. But what was the first lesson you remember that you took, and it was like maybe a mind shifting moment when you was like, oh, this is the next level.
Yeah. Well, I have two. First one, it was I had clear from the beginning that we had to play different. We need to play different. We have good players to play on a different way. and the way that they could be better players, and they and a way where we could be successful. Okay, for example, like everybody before I put Jurple in the point guard, the team had Prigioni before. So I said, no, we have Chacho and Jul. We have the best 2 point guards probably in Europe, or two of the best point guards in Europe. Let's make them play. And everybody's like, no, Jul is more a two. No, Jul is a competitor. If you make Jul defend Tavares, he will do it. He's a competitor. He has been a competitor his whole career. He will play the two. He will play the three. He wants to play. But for me, that I watched him play since he was 17 with Manresa, he was always a point guard. His mind is a point guard. He creates for the rest. He puts the pace. So if you combine that with Chacho, okay, you need a team. You have a team. You need a team that understands that Chacho and Jura are going to run the show, and we need them to play good. And they're going to make everybody play good, but they have to play on a certain way, okay? So I think that was the first situation. And then the second one, it was when we played Partizan. And we went to the, what's the name of the Union. Of the arena? Went to the, because it was Hugo, we talked about him, and Hugo looked at me and said, Pablo, this is real. Because it was like 15 minutes before the game, and it was packed, and we play against Petkovic, and it was on the time where it was the NBA lockout, and yeah. Petkovic was playing in Partizan, and it was a great atmosphere, great gym, classic. And I remember that day we went like, ooh, now this is a big game. This is the big game. And, it was, and probably it was that click where we said, hey, we're here, we're ready, and we have to be ready.
Yeah.
And that year was a big lesson for me as a coach, that it was very satisfactory, because we won the cup when no one expected. We won the cup in Barcelona against Barcelona. We played the final, and I think it was a very satisfactory year for me as coaching, because I think we managed a situation where we had to change, made adjustments that could be worth it on time. And yeah. Probably in Real Madrid, for sure, you need to win to make those adjustments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to me, you know, over this long course of a career with Real Madrid, which is very rare to have this long of a span, but it is also at some point it's going to end, right? There's always an end to it with whatever coach is. So my thought was also, after it ended, what did you hope to have left behind? You know, for the club, for the culture of the club, what did you hope to jump in? And also, what did you take with you from those years to the future for yourself? What are the two things, that one thing that you left behind, one thing you're taking forward for yourself?
Okay. What I left, and I hope it lasts, it's a way of do things. From the first thing, I'm not a guy that, okay, let's say we're going to play on red. No, Real Madrid plays on white. I mean, Pablo Laso wasn't born, and Real Madrid was already playing in white. If Pablo Laso comes as a coach, and first thing he says is, okay, let's play on red, I think Pablo Laso is stupid. So I think for me, what I can impact, let's say the team or the organization, cannot be on things like that. Cannot be on, okay, we fly to Fuenlabrada. Okay, Pablo, Fuenlabrada is like 20 minutes. I mean, that's stupid. It will be an impact on the organization. Yes, for sure. Pablo is stupid. That's an impact. No. I try to make things normal, but on a way. And probably being that many time on the same place means that you have impact on people. And that's something that I really believe. And at the same time, I really appreciate that people, you know, from outside, I remember one time in Istanbul, we were playing before the game. One guy came up to me, Pablo, you don't know me, but I'm very happy to watch Real Madrid because they're playing great, blah, blah. So for me, that's something that I left there, and I hope it will stay forever. What I took with me? Well, I took with me that we, and probably the brand of Real Madrid, help us to be competitive every night. I mean, we're not going to play perfect every night, that's for sure. There is no team on earth that he's going to play perfect every night, but it has to be competitive, and everybody has to play at the try at their best. I mean, I'm not going to kill a guy for missing free throws, because I'm the first one who understands a play who wants to make the free throws. I mean, if he wants to miss free throws, it's going to be bad for him, bad for the team, bad for me, bad for his fans. Then he shouldn't be on the team. As simple as that. So I think that what I carry is probably what the brand gave me. It's we need and we have to be competitive every night. And this is something that I make sure that when I'll coach again, I will carry with me. I mean, you have to be ready every day, not only game day, practices, every day. You need to be competitive to create a culture where you have to be competitive on every situation.
I think this is how you also probably want to recruit, right? Yeah, you want to have players that are naturally, you don't have to push them to compete. They have to naturally want to win. And that's something that you can't really teach. You can try to implement as a team, but the players, they have to they have to feel this. And I think at that level, majority of the players are, otherwise they wouldn't play at that level. That's something that you can't really it's hard to survive without being a competitor.
Yes. It's funny because basketball is made a lot of sentences like this, no? And I remember back some years, I talked to an agent who was offering me, we were talking about one player, and he said, you should sign him. He practices unbelievable. We're like, what do I want? Why do I want the guy who practices well? I want a guy who performs.
The practice championship. You're trying to win the practice championship.
Yeah. So in sports, team sports, it's like, and it's funny because, I don't know, maybe, I hope my wife doesn't hear this. I met my wife many years ago, and she said something like, she used to swim. And she said, I could not compete. I was very good. Everybody didn't understand why I quit swimming, but I could not compete. I mean, when it was time for competition, she said, I was getting nervous. I couldn't do it. Okay. This happens. Yeah. So, at the end, as coaches, you want competitors, let's say. You don't want guys who practice as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, of course, I want guys who practice well, for sure. But I think it's on the package. It's not the value.
Yes.
it's funny, but it's important. And for sure, you need people who practice as well. But, I mean, when you get a player, you want a player maybe for another things that are more important. Is he a professional? Is good with his teammates? Is he going to get along well with the culture? I remember I had an American player who played for me that he lived on New York time. What that means? The whole year. So he used to go to bed like at 4 because he used to live on New York time. I mean, no, not good. And he was a very good player and we tried to get the best out of him. But at the end, you want players to get on the same, let's say, direction. And I think it's important. And a lot of times it's not only about basketball, but it's about a lot of things. No, I don't know. When you coach Real Madrid, you know, you love soccer. So he wants to go to the soccer game.
Yeah.
For example, I don't know if Randolph wants to go to the soccer game. Maybe he doesn't care about soccer. But somehow you have to manage to – they're going to play together.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean that Randolph and Yul have to be the best friends and go together to the soccer games. No, but at the end, you have to create some relationship between them that I think it's very important for the team to succeed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, the last quarter is communication based, and that's my favorite subject because that's something that I think a lot of people undervalue in terms of how to connect with the player, but also how to manage the player in regards. And then we're going to go to the ATOs at the end. I will pop some quick questions for you. But in terms of communication, not necessarily from you, but what do you expect from the assistant coaches to communicate? And when do you expect the assistant coaches to? Because the players get tired of the head coach's voice a lot of times. So the assistant coaches usually have a better connection with the player.
Yeah.
And in what situations do you expect the assistant coach to take over more, to help you along the side? Because that's the integral part for you also.
Yeah. Well, I always think assistant coaches have a very difficult job. Why? Because, they're not driving the car, but they're telling you turn right.
Yeah.
And, you, decide to turn right or you don't. But they have to tell you turn right because they might got that feeling and they have to tell me. I always tell my assistants, hey, you tell me whatever you see. I will decide. So I think that communication is very important with them. And also them with players. Why? And you just said it perfectly. It cannot be coach all the time on, you know, on them. Like, okay, well, you have to do this, you have to do that, you blah, 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 blah. So you have to give them their space to practice with them individually or practice or do some, I don't know, individual or even drills, special drills where they take more responsibility. Or after practice, make sure to talk to them. And even players, they open up more to an assistant than maybe yeah. to the coach. Well, it's normal. It doesn't bother me. I don't get pissed because I see an assistant talking to a player. Maybe they get along well. You know, they know each other from years ago. I think they're both on the same, let's say, on the same idea of getting everything right. And I'm not thinking, well, they're talking bad about me. No, they're probably trying to solve problems or help each other. So I always think that communication is very important between the whole team, not only the coach to the players, mm-hmm. where a lot of times we say, no, Pablo is a great communicator with his team. Listen, I don't know if I'm a great communicator, but for sure, they're going to spend time with the physios, they're going to spend time with the doctors, they're going to spend time with the bus driver.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At the end, you create a group where communication is there all the time. And you talk about a lot of things. And I think assistants are a very important part because I think players know that a lot of times assistants, you know, can help them on situation where they feel good or they feel bad, or I think we should improve this, or I'm missing free throws. Okay, let's go. Maybe try to do this on the free throws. Breathe more. I don't know. I'm talking about. But I think it's very important to have that communication with everyone and not only the coach going there and say, Pablo communicates very well with his team. Well, yeah, for sure. But at the end, I mean, communication is like, I'm going to put you another example that it's easy. I remember one great player that I coached in Real Madrid, and it was funny. We used to go timeout. And I used to go, oh, blah, blah, we do this, blah, blah. And blah, okay, we do defensively this, offensively this. And we run this play, blah, 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 blah. Okay, finish. So everybody gets up and they go to the floor. This player who was on the bench, Pablo, what do we play? So I was like, we've been here for a minute talking about what we're going to do. And then you just come up to me and ask me, what do we do? Well, okay, you have to understand those things. And I think it's, you know, something that when you want to communicate with players, you, your staff, whoever, that communication has to be. I don't know. The way you communicate with your wife is important. Maybe you don't talk to her. I don't think that's going to be good, for sure. So I think communication is a very important part on every part of life, let's say. So how important it's going to be on a team. Very important. And for sure, let's say coaches, we need the help of everyone to get involved in those situations.
I think coaches, assistants and head coach, they have to be very good observers. You know, you have to see the dynamics between the players, between the coaches and the players, and who is doing what, who likes to play with each other, who doesn't like to play with each other, because there's a dynamic that you can't explain between certain, you know, you can call it chemistry, but you can also say that even though they like each other, but they don't like to play with each other, you know, and there's a difference. You have to talk and observe it. And I remember in Moscow one time I had, second year or third year was, Sonny Wimps was shooting around and he said, Benes, let's go shoot. I said, okay, let's go shoot after practice. And he was quiet. It was just going around. Just, you can see his face was just grimacing. And I said, oh, so what's going on? And he just lost it. Man, I'm just running around. And gym is empty. It's just me and him. I'm just running around. I'm not getting the ball. Blah, blah, blah. I didn't come here to just, you know, just run up and down. Yeah. And then I was listening. I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, you have to give the player credit and understand it, but also not undermine the head coach. You know, you have to balance, as the assistant coach, you have to balance the head coach's position, but also the player's position and have the understanding. And then when the conversations come up and then with the coaches, you know, yeah, maybe we should run something for Sonny to come off the screen or to get the ball here and there, just to give to plant a seed, you know, to make him aware, because the coach has so many things going on. He may not be aware of that. So just plant a seed here and there as an assistant coach to make them aware and to give them a little bit of a nudge to say, okay, now to give. And the player is happy, the coach is happy. And then that's how you kind of bring it together.
The example that you put on Sonny, he was great. I mean, okay, probably he was frustrated for anything in, I don't know who was coaching Messina at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. He was not going to go to Messina and go, hey, Torre, I need to play. But okay, he managed it with you, and you were the one who, and we're talking about a great player, great coach, and great team. And you were the one who, you know, connect a little bit everything to make it successful. And I think that's a great part. It's also funny that one of my assistants, one time, I was like, I think we've got to do this, blah, blah, we've got to do that, blah, blah. And he was telling me, and I don't remember what we were talking about. And I said, and how about this? And he said, you're getting paid for this. Do this.
That's your decision.
It was good. And he was fun. Like, okay, so then you come here and tell me, play this play for this, blah, blah. We can work on this, blah, 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 blah. But when, you know, this hard question, let's say, comes, you go like, oh, you're the coach. You're getting paid for this. Not my job. Well, I think it's a matter of, you know, I always put the example on physios. I don't go to the physio room and tell the physios how to tape ankles.
Yes.
They're good. I mean, that's what they're there for. I'm the coach. But it's funny, and we used to make funny about this, but the physios don't come up to Pablo, why do you play box on one with this guy?
Yeah.
No. So everybody has another job, but I think it's very important that communication between all of them.
Did your conversation style change over the years with the players, or did you always have the approach of to communicate with every player differently because of their style of approach? Because some guys more sensitive, some guy needs a direct line, some guys don't want it. Sometimes you have to say it between the lines for them not to feel offended, you know. So did you have a hard line that you talked to everybody the same, or did you have a conversation style where you adjusted to the players?
I think you have to adjust somehow. I'm not a guy that wants to, let's say, talk too much to them. I don't think it's good for players and coach relationship to be talking all the time, because at the end, it comes on a situation where, okay, they tell you what they think, then you tell them, blah, blah. And so it comes in a, so it's better to say, okay, this is going to be like this, blah, blah, and this is going to be like that. But maybe you cannot talk, I don't know, Jule one way and Rudy the same, or Rudy the same as Jule, or Jule the same as Mirotic. They're all different persons. And they have different even values on his life, no? Or how do you going to speak same with Draper than with Chacho? They're totally different. Same position, but they're different. So I think it cannot be, let's say, a coach on one way and just say to the players the same thing and on the same way. They're different. Players are different, and you have to read how reactions are going to be. Maybe you tell the same thing to one player, and that will help him, you know, to improve, to get more confident. And maybe you tell him the same thing to another player and you're killing him. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that you read that. And it has a little bit of psychology on this.
Yes,
but it's true that you need that. And the example that you put with Sonny, it's very clear, because players get frustrated. Okay, like, it happens to me when I used to play. I remember one day we were playing, I don't know where, Murcia, and I was like, today I'm going to take shots because blah, 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 blah. And on your head, you create your things. And maybe if the coach tells you something in that moment, you know, it can, you know, create controversy because you don't feel it the way he's saying it. And then it's a misunderstood that gets bigger. So that's why I'm always very aware of talking too much to the players and being a guy. But what I always tell them is, hey, my phone is open. It's open. My office is open. You can come and talk with me whenever you want. I'm open. I'm available. If you think something that we need to talk because you're thinking it's not being fair from my part, I'm always open to talk. But I'm not a guy that's going to be, I don't know, just saying to a guy, you're not playing because you're not playing this. No. I mean, you're not playing. I don't need to explain.
Yeah.
I'm not a guy. Because then I will have to explain. Then you are playing because you're not. No. Then you get on a situation where you're like, I don't know, broadcasting everything that you're doing. I'm not that kind of coach. I prefer my players to see it. And then if they have any questions, for sure, I'm open. I will explain it. And I have this kind of conversation with players about what happens on the floor and outside the floor. And I think they were very good. And for example, on this, Luka, who's now one of the top players in the world, it was very simple. Because when you tell, Luka, didn't you see this guy? He was open. Yeah, I saw it. I was late. My fault. Period. So, but maybe I have another player who is not able to see it the same way, see basketball the same way. So a lot of times, it's not, how can you treat, I don't know, a young guy like Alofen as Luka? They're different. They're totally different. Alofen, he doesn't mind if you tell him, hey, Carlos, put pressure on the guy. Yeah, it's good. It's gonna help you because then blah, 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 blah. So, but Luka put pressure. No, Luka is not going to do it. But then Luka is going to find the guy in the corner. And maybe Alofen is not going to find him. That doesn't talk good or bad about Luka. That doesn't talk good or bad about Alofen. They're different players. And at the end, you need to get the best out of them. And that's the most important thing.
I think it's the most delicate part of communication with the players that you don't get. There's no double standard. You have to you have to find and to explain the certain things and not to get winded up in this, you know, playing games and saying one thing, because it, at the end it comes out and then you're the one who gets caught in the middle of it. So it's a very delicate situation. I think at the highest level, the coaches understand the dynamics of the whole roster.
Yeah, and for sure, you have, all coaches have, let's say, red lines.
Yes.
Red lines. I don't know. Okay, on defense, we're going to do this. And if you don't do it, you cannot play here. I'm going to give you time, okay? But if we're in, I don't know, March, and we've been together since August, and I told you, sending baseline, then if you're not doing in March, I mean, you don't want to do it, or you're not, let's say, smart enough to understand it, or I'm shitty coach. I mean, I criticize myself, but the situation is we're not doing what we're supposed to do. Okay, we're talking about basketball. We're talking about off the floor. I remember with the, how do you say in English, the guy who takes care of the clothes, equipment.
Yeah, equipment manager. Yep.
Okay. The equipment manager. First time I talked to him when I became the coach in Madrid. I said, listen, I'm just going to ask you for one thing. For practice, I want shorts the same color. And so we're like, yeah, why? I'm like, because it's very complicated for me to see everybody with different kind of color of shorts, blah, 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 blah. And he looked at me and he said, okay, is that all? I'm like, I don't know, you tell me. So it was simple. But for me, it was a red line. It was funny because like 3 or 4 years later, after that first conversation, they all went out with the same color. I told him, I don't care if there's blue, white, or black. Or red, but all the same color. Okay. So 4 years later, new player came. And it was all in one color, but him. He ran up to him and we're like, no. No. Did I put it? No, yeah, but you know, everybody was wearing on red, so I was on black. And he said, No. You were on red for something. Okay. But he did his job. And yes. I think that part is important. You have your red lines inside and outside the floor. And you cannot go by those red lines because when you put those red lines, it's because they're going to be, for me, bad for the team. And I think those red lines are important when you become a coach and when you're a coach. Make sure that everybody understands that you're on the same path.
Standard. Yeah. Pick a standard. Yeah. So my ATOs, you ready? The quick pick and pop quick trigger questions. Yes. Advice to your younger self as a coach.
Be passionate.
Best personal investment.
Best personal in my family.
Best professional investment.
Players who care about the team.
Worst advice you received as a coach.
You shouldn't do that.
One overrated aspect of coaching.
We control everything.
One underrated aspect of coaching.
We have to control everything.
one dinner, you and three other people that are alive, who would you go to dinner with?
Friends.
And the last one is I ask everyone is from my favorite podcaster, Tim Ferriss, favorite failure, a failure that you learned the biggest lesson from, and nevertheless you failed, but you learned something that you carry on today, and you can consider it a failure, but it's still something that you holds big value to you.
Back on the day we lost the semifinal of the Final Four in Istanbul against Fenerbahce. I left Nocioni out of the team. I wouldn't do that again.
Mm. Okay. Very clear.
Clear and simple.
Clear and simple. Straight to the point. All right, Coach. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. I hope I didn't drill you too much with my questions.
It was great.
I appreciate you. If people want to follow you or message, I think on Twitter, I think you are most active. Is there something else? Is there somewhere else that they can find you? What's the Twitter handle?
No, usually Twitter. I don't use it that much. I'm not a big Twitter. I use it all of a sudden. If somebody sends me a question, I will try to answer. Okay. But I'm not a Twitter master. I do some things and I'm on it. Sometimes I use it to read news or whatever, but I'm not a Twitter master, let's say.
Okay, that's good.
If anyone asks me something, I try to respond.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much. Okay. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.